exposition quadrant, which they warp into every episode. I'm like, you guys are wasting like 3 good minutes on this shit. We get it. We get it.
Exposition quadrant. Hello and welcome to the Star Trek Discovery Recap Freakcast. This is another week of this painful, painful show. I'm Anita Sarkeesian, and I'm joined by Ebony Astor.
Hey!
Yeah, all right. We're both super tired, so this is going to be a little loopy, and that's okay.
I guarantee you, every episode is going to start with some excuse.
Every episode, I know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I find this show exhausting. It's mm-hmm. just, like, you know, so... Okay, let's start big picture thoughts about this episode. What did you think? Because last week, we actually kind of, sort of, maybe liked that one a little bit, right?
Yeah, you know what? I tell you what, I actually kind of, sort of, liked this one, too. And
okay.
I'm prepared to differ with you, you know, in our pre-podcast prep. you indicated that you were, like, bored to tears by this one. This one, regardless of whether it felt like, you know, Trek, in quotation marks to me, I found it a relatively entertaining hour of television. Of course, highlights for me were Stamets almost dying. I was like, oh, Lord, deliver me from my pain. I felt like my prayers had been answered. And then, psych, he was still alive.
I don't know why you would think they'd kill off the white dude guy. Like,
I thought, like, maybe this show is boldly going someplace I didn't expect it to go. I was like, I did not expect them to, because clearly this guy's set up to be, you know, a major character. Boom. We lost Captain Giorgio. Maybe we're going to lose this turd. But no.
No.
He survived to the end. Only to find out he and Dr. Culber
Ricky.
Are life partners. And I was like, Wilson Cruz, there's got to be someone else in that crew of 134 people who's A, hotter, B, not a fucking tool.
That's fair.
But whatever. I don't want to tell anybody how to live their lives.
Yep. No, totally fair. Okay, I'll say this. I didn't hate it as much as I hated the first couple of episodes. I feel like maybe it is on par with the last episode in that this is sort of the level to which we could expect, where it's not the most excruciating thing to watch ever. There's little pieces of...
Put that on the poster.
There's little pieces of stuff that you're like, yeah, I appreciate this perspective and I appreciate these conversations, but like, it's not good TV. You know, like, it's just, it's not blowing my mind. And so, you know, Carolyn and I were doing the Halt and Catch Fire podcast recaps, and we just finished it. Like, the whole series
just ended.
Ooh,
working with Carolyn, dropping names.
And, you know, that's a show that we really, really love. And I think that there's some tension for me in terms of, you know, having to spend the time watching these shows and thinking about what to say with them when they're so vastly different. And like the back-to-backness of these, I record both of these podcasts on Sundays. And so one of them gives me so much to talk about and so many characters that I'm into. And this one, I'm just like, it's a slog. Like, it's not like we don't have stuff to talk about, but I still don't really give a shit about any of these characters. So we'll see how it goes, right? First seasons can be rough. We're here. And I, like you said, when we were just sort of pre-show talking, they might be beating us into submission, right? Like, it might just be...
Yeah, and you know, it could be that. And, you know, I have to say that it only took 5 episodes for that to happen. So clearly my defenses get worn down a lot sooner than... But I think it's partially because it's Trek, right? Like... I was explaining this to somebody on Twitter, and I was just like, I feel like this show is like my ain't shit cousin, and they're always gonna fuck up, but they're family, so you let them keep coming around and borrowing your money. It's not right, it's not good for either one of you, but it is what it is. You know, they're family.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah.
Was there anything that stood out for you as being good? Like, actually good. Because I do have a couple of things that I actually really enjoy.
So, I'm liking the morality conversations and the morality discussions around, like, torture and sentience.
Right.
And, like, you know, here's my problem. Compose your thoughts, Anita. Okay, yes. So I like the conversations around whether the tardigrade is real or not, whether it's suffering or not, whether we care mm-hmm. that it's suffering or not, whether war is more mm-hmm. important with the whole Machiavelli bullshit of the ends justify the means. Right. I think that, you know, I think the show is cheesy. I think it's heavy-handed. Mm-hmm. I think opening mm-hmm. up with Michael with this sequence, this dream sequence of being like, she feels empathy. Right? Like, it was like beating us over the head with that. So I think there's a lot of really cheesy shit in their attempt to talk about stuff that I find interesting. Mm-hmm. Right? So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I found that a really, like you said, you know, it was certainly, you know, heavy-handed and, like, you know, in bold print and underlined. But I was glad that they continued to go there. I would have found it more compelling if they had wrestled with it for longer. Because, I mean, by the end of the episode, of course, spoiler alert, the tardigrade is set free, right? So now you have to wonder, does that mean that entire conversation, that entire, like, philosophical dilemma, you know, is considered dealt with in the universe of the show?
Right.
And, of course, it's not dealt with. Regardless of whether Lieutenant Stamets is going to plug himself in to the machine every week and get dosed up with tardigrade DNA, the question still remains about exploitation of living creatures, right?
I think that, like, you know, they set it up so at the beginning the Admiral is saying, we're on the hunt for tardigrades.
Yeah.
Like, we are looking for this thing so that we can put them in all of our ships. So I suspect if the writing staff is smart enough that it's going to circle back around. But the other thing that you and I had talked about is this technology can't exist past the show.
Exactly.
It's not in any of the other shows. So, like, is this the end of that already? I kind of doubt it.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, the show's going to try and, you know, have its cake and eat it too in terms of introducing cool new technologies that would completely transform, you know, the way by which Starfleet, you know, goes out and explores and yes, conquers the universe. But yeah, they can't have it both ways. And so ultimately, all of those, you know, cool new technologies are going to have to get either destroyed, dismissed, whatever. So we'll see how they choose to deal with them in the future. But yeah, I had expected, I had hoped that we would be dealing with the tardigrade issue, you know, poor Ripper, for longer than we did. But ultimately, it was almost like it was just a 2-episode, like, you know, special episode.
Yeah, totally. You know what else I loved
TV.
In this episode?
What?
The hottie Starfleet officer in the jail. I was like...
Anita, sometimes I wonder how you and I can exist on the same planet with such vastly different.
I didn't actually like
that
his character, but I was like, You're hot. I can stare at you for a while, I guess. Like, get me through this episode.
Whatever. Yo, Ash Tyler, right? Like, I made a concerted effort to write down everybody's names because, for the most part, people are still boring me to tears. Mm-hmm. So if I don't write their names down when I see them
doctor,
I watch with captions, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I call the doctor Ricky because I don't know what his name is, and that was his character in my so-called life.
It's Culber.
Whatever,
I'm
gonna it's Ricky
now. I'm
going
to set myself the opportunity to correct you at every opportunity. But yo, so Ash Tyler, the guy that you thought was cute, boring, whatever.
Yeah, totally.
Anyways, I was excited. He was part of one of the things that I actually, like, unironically completely enjoyed in the episode, and that was the appearance of Harcourt Fenton Mudd. Shout out to Harcourt Fenton Mudd, classic Star Trek character, you know, and I, because I had, you know, deliberately avoided any spoilers and talk about Discovery before it premiered, I had no idea that they were going to be bringing back this classic character. And of course, they brought back Sarek and just, you know, fucking dropped the punch bowl on that one. But I really loved Rainn Wilson's version of Harvey Mudd on this. Like, I just thought it was funny. I thought it was thoughtful. I thought, you know, it was puckish and mischievous. It's certainly a darker version of Mudd than we're used to seeing, but I was completely on board for it. And also, I love that he's the voice of, like, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but, like, anti-colonialism and, you know, anti-capitalism, right? Because he's like, no, you fucking created this problem, you and Starfleet, when you decided you were going to be fucking space cowboys and go out and, you know, explore the known galaxy. Well, hello, what if there are people who don't want to meet you at their front door?
Yeah. Well, you know? But so, and the thing that sucks about it is that we are against him. It's been set up. So like that statement I thought was really great. And I was just like, yeah, you're not wrong, dude. And then, you know, it's set up so that he is deceiving, like he's selling out his cellmates in this awful sort of way, and they abandon him. And so I suspect we're going to see him again at some point if the show continues, because he does that whole, like, this isn't the last of me that you'll see. I actually wrote down the line because it was so cheesy where, I don't know where it is in my notes right now, but it was just like, he says, I'm coming for you, Lorca. You haven't seen the last of Mud. Or whatever his name is.
Yeah. No, and that's totally of a piece with his kind of melodrama in the original series, where we get to see him in a couple of just like classic episodes. So yeah, I absolutely love that. And you know, in the trailers when we saw Rainn Wilson and saw that he was going to be in, you know, this Klingon prison with Lorca, I had no idea he was going to be. So it was a really cool surprise for me. I have to say, despite the resolution of Mud being revealed as the saboteur, like the spy, the mole, to the end, I kept thinking your boyfriend, Ash Tyler, was going to be a double cross. Like there was going to be a twist and he was going to turn out to be like, A, actually really dig in his, you know, dalliances with the Klingon female commander, and B, like he was gonna be the one behind like selling out the other members of the team. And I still don't like the look of that guy, so I'm fully expecting in future episodes him to be revealed as a mole. Like, I just, something does sit right with me, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that, you know, like, I mean, that makes me a little uncomfortable to imply that he's, like, enjoying being assaulted. Or whatever's happening there, you know.
Right. No, my take was that, okay, this is a really, like, grand theory that I had constructed in my head.
Perfect.
But that he wasn't being assaulted because, okay, like, our first meeting with the Klingons in the original series involves them looking quite humanoid, right? And it's revealed that it's because of this genetic manipulation that has gone on. So I was like, whoa, what if this Ash Tyler dude is like, you know, like manipulated Klingon? And so he, you know, he's not a prisoner at all, so it wouldn't have been assault because that whole thing was a lie.
Right. So you completely headcanoned the prisoner situation, thinking that he was a mole.
I'm writing fanfic as we speak.
Yeah, you know? Clearly.
Like, I'm into it. Clearly. I'm into it. Clearly. If it is a safe, sane, and consensual relationship, I'm into it.
Yeah.
The only way that dude would be interesting to me. But yo, so I was like, I think, you know, this guy, there's something off about his reactions. And so I just thought he was going to be the mole, because you knew there was going to be a mole, right?
Yeah.
But then it's turned out to be, you know, Harcourt, Fenton, Mud. You always got to give him his three names. And I was like, oh, man, I know that, you know, he's always kind of been presented as this disreputable character, but I don't know. I hope we find a way to redeem him. I'm interested in seeing more Rainn Wilson, which is never something I thought I would say in my life.
You know, this show really, really makes you just sink way down to the bottom of excitement for things that you never thought.
God, it does.
Yeah, it sucks all the soul out of everything, that, like, the little gems that you're given.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, so interesting. We had just talked about, without saying, that Lorca, a.k.a. Lucius Malfoy, is abducted.
Captain Michael Bennett. Detective Michael Bennett.
No, what? I'm talking about Lorca being abducted, yo. What?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about Lorca. Like, you keep calling him Lucius Malfoy. I'm going to start calling him Detective Michael Bennett. And this is a shout out for a super secret Twitter person who's been listening to the podcast. And right now, this guy is losing his fucking mind.
Wait, yeah, good. Why don't you put in little in jokes between you and one other person that nobody understands, neither me.
We have, I guarantee you, three listeners. So right now, I'm servicing one third of our readership.
Can I just tell you, I have not told you, but we have thousands of listeners, actually. So put that in.
Are these
oh my
bots?
God, Ebony, be nice to these listeners that listen to us do this shit every week.
If I don't hear from them at Ebony Aster, then they don't exist to me.
Yo. Whatever. Okay, let me finish with this nonsense. Lorca, okay. a.k.a. Lucius Malfoy, a.k.a. Michael Bennett, or whatever the fuck. Yep. Why do I know that name?
Because he was on that show, Awake, which lasted for, like, 2/3 of a season. This is what I love. Someone wrote in to be like, yo, he'll always be this character to me. And it was literally from a show that lasted, like, 2/3 of a season.
That's
I was
fair.
Like, oh, my God. Fan dedication
That's
is the
fair,
best.
Man.
I'm
you
into
get attached
it.
To actors and characters. I get it. I'm, yeah it's all yeah. good. You can have that. So anyways, he gets abducted and it's eye rolling and whatever and blah, blah, blah. And he gets tortured with his vision problem that he won't correct
for, yeah.
because he likes to suffer and because his pain is his fucking like motivation in life or whatever the hell.
Right.
So because that happens, Saru, who is first officer, gets into command and you watch him mm-hmm. grapple with whether he's good enough. So you see him.
Right.
Ask the computer to give him, like, who are the top 100, you know, the top 10 best captains ever, and what are the things that
right.
make them good, right? And it's
right.
just, and it's just, it's so cute and sad and cute, and he's just like, I want to be good, and the whole episode is about, like, how do I be good, too? And then at the end, when he's like, performance evaluation, nah, never mind, I did fine.
Right.
And I'm like, that was kind of sweet.
I thought so, too. I really... Like I said, Doug Jones, shout out every episode, because I like the way that, his character is developing. And we see him try on a model of leadership that does not fit him. And so you can see him actively trying to Lorcify himself in this episode and be like more of a badass, right? And be very uncompromising. But ultimately, at the end, it is also Saru who says... You know, I don't care what you do, but go, you know, help the tardigrade. Go help Ripper.
Yeah.
You know, save its life. And that's more in line with who he is.
Yeah.
And with, you know, the creature that, you know, and, like, has this little, like, threat gangly and whatever. Like, he realizes that there are different models of command and that he has to find his own way. The one through line in that, like, BuzzFeed listicle, top 10 Starfleet captains, take a quiz to find out which one you are. You know, like, the thing that they all were was, you know, quintessentially themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's why that conversation at the end with Burnham was, you took away my opportunity to learn from Giorgio.
Yeah.
Or Giorgio.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's her name. Fucking names in the show. I don't remember any of them. Yeah, and like... And actually,
she gave
I didn't
him
even,
the telescope.
What?
She gave him the telescope. The telescope that I didn't even I see
was,
get
oh,
delivered.
I literally... I wrote in my notes, I wonder if Ebony saw the goddamn fucking telescope this time, or if it was just like phased out of your vision.
You know, in a way, like, I was watching this episode, and I know that this is contrary to, like, the reality of actually producing a show, distributing a show, airing a show, etc., but in some ways, I feel like they're talking specifically to me, because I had mentioned in the last podcast how I had totally missed seeing the telescope, so of course they open with that, and they're like, all right, are you paying attention now? In the last podcast, I was like, who the fuck are these crew members? Are we even going to ever get to learn their names? And then in this episode, there's too many names. Like, we learn everyone's name. I feel like someone is like, oh, you think you got a problem? Fucking deal with this, you dummy. You know? And they're speaking directly to me.
So the fact that everything is just like, the exposition is out of control and is just like,
oh,
beating
God.
Us over the head is because of you. We can blame you for that.
Yeah, but I did not ask for exposition. Someone else asked for that, you know? No, exposition quadrant, which they warp into every episode. I'm like, you guys are wasting like 3 good minutes on this shit. We get it. We get it.
Exposition quadrant.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, it's really good. Okay, let's talk about Tilly.
Because, yes.
Okay, so here's this is a genuinely sincere question, and this is not at all, like, making fun of the actor or anything like that. She has a lot of acne. And I'm wondering, because actors and, like, are usually very not that, right? Like, it's very intentional or it's edited out, you know, like, not that mm-hmm. this has the budget for that. But, like, there's something around that that I feel like is part of her character as opposed to just, like, a thing that happens to people. Like, for example, the giant zit I have on my chin today.
Oh man, and this is why we need like behind the scenes video of us recording podcasts.
I don't actually
in our respective closets.
I don't actually get breakout very often, and so I've had this one. I'm like, what the fuck
listen,
is
yeah,
it?
I don't get breakouts very often.
I know,
whatever.
Shut up.
Is this a shitty Dove ad? Okay, here are my thoughts about Tilly and about the wonders of like high definition recording. I think we're seeing it more. You know, like, obviously, Burnham is blessed with, like,
preternaturally
beautiful skin,
yeah.
Right? But, yeah, I think, you know, like, Tilly, she's certainly not homely. I think she's actually a very beautiful woman.
Yeah.
But she's not, like, you know, conventionally, like, supermodel attractive in the way that is often, you know, like, the crew of a starship on these shows. But I think, you know, she's very, like... God, I don't even know how to say this without sounding like I'm shitting on her, and I'm not. But she's, like, everyday pretty. She's beautiful in a way that's more approachable. And so, yeah, I think, like, the imperfections of her skin, the fact that we hear her, you know, lightly snoring, which was adorable in that one little scene, the fact that she's not, like, super skinny, you know, all is meant to make her more real, and I appreciated that effort. Like, I don't
yeah.
think it's
so
meant as
I'm
a
just
way
wondering
to, like,
if it's actually intentional. Like, I'm just wondering if that is an intentional,
right.
or even if it was put on her some way. But, so, like, I appreciate all that stuff, too. You know, there is, I think we did talk about previously about how, like, using her, being neuroatypical. Thank
uh-huh.
you. As, like, a weird device to counter or to, like, feed off of Michael, right? To, like, help with Michael's development.
Right.
And, like, it was just, it
right.
felt really exploitative to me.
Right.
And I don't,
right.
I still don't know where I land with that because, you know, she's kind of charming in this way, right? Like, she's
mm-hmm.
growing on
mm-hmm.
me a little bit. And she's like, I love feelings. And, like, I think I goffed out loud, but I was like, but yeah, like, I kind of like that. Like, that's kind of cute. But
yeah,
she's also
so utterly sincere.
But she's also there to give us exposition, right? Like, when they find
right.
Stamets's body,
mm-hmm.
and she says, I think he injected himself with the fucking tardigrade DNA, after you're like, no shit. Like,
yeah, like, he clearly injected himself with Ripper's DNA.
It was totally unnecessary to say that. And so I feel like, you know, she's just kind of there to do that. And that, you know, maybe she'll have her very special own episode with her own, you know, whatever, but...
Oh, yeah, no, that's definitely coming. We're definitely going to get a peek back into Tilly's life. We're also going to get a very special episode where she's allowed to be very brave and heroic, and I'm into it. I'm fully on board with Tilly. Mark that down in your scrapbooks, listeners. I'm fully on board with Tilly. There's nothing about her that I dislike. If there's anything that I am still, you know, ambivalent about, it's that, yes... You know, during her introduction to us, you know, I was worried that, yeah, like you said, you know, her fact of life as a neuroatypical person trying to navigate and negotiate the social hierarchies of this starship, I felt like it might be exploitative, you know, and also might be kind of like flat and one dimensional. But I think that what we're getting to this point is pretty interesting. And yeah, I think, you know, she's probably there as a voice and as a tool for, like, Michael Burnham to continue to, you know, express her emotions and have the freedom and permission to explore them honestly. But whatever, I think they're going to have a great, you know, friendship on board. I'm into it.
So that
I do experience some human emotion, Anita.
I feel like they're trying to do this might be a stretch, but my favorite Star Trek show, Voyager... brings on 10 of 10 of 9 of 10. Oh my
seven
god.
Of nine.
7 of 9.
7 of 9.
Clearly my
I
favorite
don't even
show.
I like that show.
Yeah, I just don't know anything. 7 of 9 and so one, she's obviously there for fan service, and like that actor unfortunately just shows up on shows as like this fan servicey thing all the time, which drives me nuts, but one of the things that I think was actually interesting about it was the relationship between Janeway and Seven in terms of like learning how to be human again. And I feel like there's might be this weird like parallel maybe with Tilly and Burnham, like you were just saying that like it's because Burnham is so tough, like just so like what's the word that you used last week to describe her, like wooden almost. Was that the word you used? Like, she's very...
God, I don't remember. She's very like emotionally closed off.
Yeah, and like
still as a residual of her Vulcan training and the trauma she experienced.
But I find her kind of flat. Like I find the acting kind of flat. Like I don't feel like there's a, personally for me, like as we're going through it, I still find the depth of the character lacking. Like I feel like it's forced.
Hard disagree.
Yeah, I know. We totally disagree. But I'm just not, it's not there for me. But if I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt, I'm wondering if there is that kind of relationship where Tilly's way of existing in the world has to be so verbalized. It has to be, like, mm-hmm. explained. All of the emotional moments and cues have to be explained out loud mm-hmm. so that she's on the same page with her peers, that that it's forcing Michael to talk about things out loud and whatever, right? Yeah. So, you know, that like this might be interesting.
I think it's going to be. I'm like, if my optimism meter was at a, like it had been -7, but then after last week's episode was at a solid 3. I'm at a 3.75 this week. I'm getting there.
Wait, is your meter? What's the one?
It's 1 to 10
in the meter. The one is the optimistic.
One is completely not hopeful. 10 is overjoyed. I want to take it to the chapel and get married.
But you just went down.
No, it wasn't 3, and now it's a 3.75.
I'm saying
at the very beginning, wow. It was a -7.
Dude, Ebony, I have had, like, no sleep all weekend. I just said these basic numbers just don't make sense to me.
Listeners, all 3 of you.
Ebony,
I am 3 hours behind Anita, and yet I am fresh.
You are fresh.
I am articulate. Mm-hmm. I have a theme song in my holster, ready to go. Wow. Just kidding, I don't.
Oh, damn. I was so excited.
I know, but
okay.
The thing is, I like to compose those in the moment.
Fair.
Can we talk about hair real quick?
Yeah, we can.
Because I want to make sure that I want to make sure that folks get the vital hair news from me. Okay, so at first glance, I was like, yo, Burnham's hair, still looking good, still looking moisturized. It's looking more sculptural than it has been, less like, you know, defined, distinct curls. I'm into it, right? But then, as we got a close-up, it started to not sit right with me, and I was like, is something going on here? I feel like it might be the world's most bomb natural lace front. I'm going to be doing further research on this week to week, people. I will present my findings. Because they can't pull the wool over our eyes. They can't keep sweeping this under the rug. I'm going to find out what's going on. But I also thought it was interesting in that scene where, and this is related, where Lorca is getting bossed around by the Admiral. And she's like, yo, you can't just be flinging hither and yon. Like, we're going to rein you in, right? There was a black Vulcan in there and he had a shaved head. Which I was like, exactly. Clearly, there is a kind of like Vulcan hair model that everybody is choosing, you know, to use. But there are other options. We had Tuvok as well with his natural hair. Mm-hmm. There was no reason for Burnham to show up with that bootleg, off-brand, generic dollar store Vulcan wig at the beginning. There are other Vulcan options for Vulcans of the African diaspora to employ. Get it together.
But this goes into the fact that, like, a lot of these shows, especially like CBS this isn't even a CBS thing, right? This is like a network thing in general, that like they don't trust their viewers. They don't think we're smart enough. And so they already said she went to a Vulcan school. Like, they don't have to put this fucking thing on our head to make her look like that, right?
So exactly.
It's just frustrating. That moment, too, with the Admiral, like, she, so there's a couple of interesting things that are set up for this episode in here, where the Admiral is, like, Lorca actually says, are you uncomfortable with the power I've been given, Admiral?
Yeah.
My ship, my way. Because she's saying she doesn't like Burnham on the ship. A lot of people think that justice isn't being served. I think the Admiral is, and Starfleet in general, is sort of questioning, are questioning Lucius's ways in terms of like being super warmongering. They're telling him to step back. So what, now he gets abducted, and next episode they're going to be like, you know, they're going to fucking change their tune or whatever, because, you know, stakes got higher or what have you, I'm sure. But there is a moment at least where you're like, oh, Starfleet isn't totally on board with this shit. Like, Lorca is kind of
rogue. You know, I read that a different way. Not that Starfleet was questioning or trying to rein his militaristic tendencies. It's that now that the wisdom and the efficacy of his tactics have been proven, they want to deploy them more wide scale.
Yes.
And
you know
so
what?
They
you're
can't
right.
have
right.
him acting, you know, in kind of a lone gun kind of way. And so it was a moment where I was like, you know, it's like when they were saying with the tardigrades, like there's an active hunt for more of these creatures. And you're just like, oh, no, like Rippers, wherever you are in your mushroom gardens, you got to run away because Starfleet is coming for you.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
You know, how did you feel about the peek into Lorca's motivations and his past? So, you know, he's lost his last command, the Baran, I believe during the Battle of the Binaries?
Yeah.
I was kind of,
No. Isn't Battle of the Binaries the one that we watched in the first season, the first episode?
Yeah, so that was like 7 months, apparently.
So that, the Hottie Tyler was on the ship with Burnham and Giorgio then. Because he was captured.
No, he was on a different ship. He was on a different ship. The Jaeger, I think, is what he said.
Okay.
But so anyway, you know, Malfoy, Detective Bennett, you know, lost his last command I was intrigued. I won't say that I was pleased, but I was intrigued by this peek into his motivation. It's very much like, you know, and this is what they do with any kind of like heroic male character, or even, you know, anti-heroic male character, whereby like past trauma of others is perceived as be like this galvanizing force in their lives. And usually it's like the death or sexual assault of a woman in their life, right?
Yep.
But it can also be like, you know, murder, mayhem, etc. So anyway, so we see that peek into him, but then we find out that the reason why his crew is dead is because like he blew them up.
Yeah.
And it wasn't entirely clear what went down, but he's like, I wanted to save them from the death and the slow torture that they would get on the Klingon homeworld. And it just sounded real unhinged to me as
sure
the reason for blowing up your crew. It sounded straight up
because
cult-like.
He literally just got off the ship in one episode, like within a matter of hours, right? Like it, or maybe. It did not seem like days had passed. It seemed genuinely, sincerely, like a couple hours. So, like, that justification, while you literally just got off the ship with one other guy that was, like, just half beaten up. What I was thinking in this moment, too, was that they gave motivation for Burnham to be all, like, fuck the Klingons, they'd killed my family, and, like, all the weirdly racist, bigoted shit that she was saying at the beginning that we were questioning. And so now he has a relatively similar motivation of, I endured this horrible thing at the hands of the Klingons, I had to make this huge sacrifice that weighs on me, right? Because he's, like, self-absorbed and doesn't, it's totally loony.
It is.
and so yeah, I think we are supposed to see him, like, I think the general audience is supposed to see him as a little bit off kilter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're, and maybe this is one of those things where it's like, if you're not already reading that into this, that particular story should help you see the direction that they want you to view him through, or the lens they want you to view him through.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't think that the show was encouraging us to think like, "Woo, thank God he blew up his crew and saved them from a fate worse than death." I think it was, you know, suggesting like, hey, maybe if you have been completely on board with this guy's behavior to this point, maybe stop and pull back and question why he is the way he is, because maybe there's some shit going on there that's not entirely A-okay.
Yeah.
All right, CBS viewer, just wait a minute, check it out, open your mind. I think this is something we said in our last episode, that there appear to be maybe some kind of like progressive voices or impulses that occasionally like resist the binding of CBS programming and you know, like bust through.
Yeah, that's the hope. I will also just add my weekly, I'm back to Paul is a annoying tool. I'm back. I'm back with you on that. And you know, so I'm here. Thanks. Welcome me back.
I was
Thank you.
so I don't want him to be with Culber.
Can we talk about the mirror?
I'm happy that we're getting... What?
Can we talk about that mirror at the end? Hold on. So the end scene, we have Ricky and Paul brushing their teeth, so they're clearly lovers, right? I don't know if we knew that before that scene, but that was...
I think, like, we were... we knew something was going on because it was that very, like, you know, kind of... The kind of tension between them spoke to more than just being, like, colleagues who didn't like each other.
Which I appreciate that there is a queer character on the show, or several, I know. Mm-hmm. And because Star Trek has such a bad history with queer representations in general. Like, that is one of the, consistent through lines of, like, totally demonizing any kind of non-super masculine presentations for men. But, so, first of all... You know what? Future toothbrushes are black. Just so you know, you brush your teeth with the same fucking type of toothbrush, except they're black, and therefore it's the future. It's like the shiny blankets. Like, blankets are shiny, and therefore it's the future.
I know, what the fuck?
Come on, think of something different. Anyways, it's this moment where they're, like, caring for each other, and it's sweet and whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, Paul's annoying, but it's, you know, if you can erase him from the scene, it's sweet. But, so then... Ricky walks away, and he walks away, and then his reflection is in the mirror, and then he finally walks away, like, you know, a couple seconds later. So clearly there's some residue and something happening that has sustained through his injecting himself with the tardigrade DNA. And I was like, but what? Like, I was like, I know you're just, like, dropping a little hint, but I was legitimately, did you split personality? Like, is there a split? Is there, like... I don't know.
I'm hoping that what we get is a split into, like, evil Stamets and even more evil Stamets wreaking havoc on the ship, because that might be the only way that I can sustain interest in him for longer than 10 seconds. I honestly, Anita, I'm being completely honest with you. I had a moment where I was reckoning with my hatred of that character when I thought he was dead. And I was like, whoa, you know what? I misjudged this guy. Maybe he deserves some of my honor and respect. And then he came back to life.
And you're like, fuck that guy.
So mad. I was so mad. I can't even tell you. Like, I think I had to pause the showing for a bit. It was just like,
take a couple deep
this
breaths.
This fucking guy. He can't even die right. Upset.
All right. On that note, why don't you give us the song for the week?
Okay. Discovery. I've discovered that I don't hate you quite as much as I thought. Yeah.
Yay.
Yay.
Woo. All right, y'all. Thank you for joining us for another week of this messy show. I am now actually on Twitter, so you can at me at Anita Sarkeesian if you feel
Don't
so
be
inclined.
A jerk.
But you can only at me. Here are the rules, because clearly I can control the rules of Twitter. No, I can't. That's actually a conspiracy theory, so let's just, like, nip that in the bud right quick.
Right.
That you have to send me nice things. Or neutral things. Just don't send me mean things. How about that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you want me to die, cool. You don't need to tell me.
Keep it to yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, nice things. And if you want to send me kitten gifts all day, I'll take your kitten gifts all day long. So, Ebony is at Ebony Astor, and you can
hit me up.
I was about
Here's
to be like,
me,
you can
exist.
Send mean things to her, but no, don't do that either, because that's not
Yeah,
nice.
Don't do
no.
that, but
send
also
Ebony
recognize that I have no time for any kind of malarkey on Twitter, so, like, I'll ban you with a quickness. I'll block that shit.
Man, I just opened this account, it hasn't even been a week, and it's just the most shit fire, dumpster fire storm nonsense. I'm just like, man, Twitter, some things never change, so, like, it would be really nice to get some nice things in my mentions, because right now it's, you know, it's just a mess. But you can also add us at FemFreak, where everybody is at, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. We have this episode up. There's an RSS feed. We have it up on Google Play. We will have it up on that other one with an S whose name I can't remember right
Stitcher.
Now. Stitcher. Should be up soon. And iTunes is a fucking nightmare to navigate, so that'll happen at some point as well. So we are slowly going to get this to a place where you can actually subscribe to it and get it every Monday.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. You can access all of our videos and articles and podcasts at feministfrequency.com. We love you. Not.
I don't.
Whatever. You think there's, you think there's only two of them.
At most, I have a tentative affection.
I see the thousands of you that are hanging out with us. So thank you. We'll see you next week.